I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back on a special. I think everything's burning. In Seattle edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am joined, as I am every single Wednesday afternoon, by Fangraph's John Taylor. John, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing better than Mariners fans today, I think. You were setting off some tweets last night, John Taylor, about Seattle and our old friend Jerry DePoto. Would you like to illuminate on what has transpired in Seattle, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh over the last 24 hours?
Sure. So, I mean, the Pittsburgh part of it is the funnier part. But so you got the Mariners trading away Kendall Graveman, their closer, for Abraham Toro, who is basically a utility guy for the Astros. They gave a good reliever to their direct divisional competition a day after a really big win. Jerry DePoto going on about how this move is part of a series of moves. It's not the only move. It'll make more sense after the next move. And then they trade for Tyler Anderson from the Pirates after an earlier deal by the Phillies for Tyler Anderson had fallen apart because of, I believe, a prospect had bad medicals or something. So I guess that was the other shoe waiting to drop. I can't really say it's much of a shoe. I really, really hope that there's more to come from the Mariners. I know a lot of reporters have said the Mariners are looking to buy more. But at the same time, man, what a depressing trade for the Mariners. What a depressing existence for the Mariners. I just look at that deal, like, I just don't get it at all.
But if you put yourself in Jerry DePoto's shoes, if you had to do that, and I don't want to advise it, folks, what would you guess is his rationale here? What would you guess?
So I am assuming that. I am assuming that he is looking to add another reliever in place of Graveman, and that this move was about moving some salary around while also getting a piece for next year who helps if for example, the Mariners decide to let Kyle Seager walk and maybe they have Toro become their starting third baseman. But, yeah, I don't even get it with that, because why... It's one thing if you're going to give up a reliever who is set to be a free agent and who you believe is overperforming and you're getting a piece back who's going to be on your team, not just this year, but the next year, and is helpful in that regard. That's a trade that makes sense. And you can argue you know, is this what that trade is on in a bubble, in a vacuum? I think you probably could get a little better than that for Kendall Graveman, but whatever. That's not the important thing. To me, the important thing is that you traded him to Houston, a team directly in front of you in the division. And even if Seattle's chances at the division are small, and even if their playoff odds are bad, and even if their Pythagorean record suggests that they're really a below 500 team as opposed to an above 500 one, is that really the move you want to make if you're Jerry DePoto, especially given how badly it seemed to piss off the entirety of the clubhouse? You're going to send your good closer to your division competition for not a good closer? You already had a good closer. Why are you subtracting to make an addition? I know it's the most Jerry DePoto shit to do that, but it's like, it just doesn't, it is so divorced from the reality on the ground with the Mariners and what that team has done, what that group of players believes it can accomplish, what that fan base is hoping for. I don't think anyone I don't think any Mariners fan thinks realistically that this team is a World Series contender, barring an incredible deadline that just changes everything, and that seems unlikely. I don't think you were going to find any Mariners fans who were seriously talking themselves into that. I do think Mariners fans thought that this team could be a contender, if nothing else, for at least a wild card spot, and maybe this is a team that finally breaks that playoff drought and gets in. And yeah, maybe it's just the play-in game, and maybe they get wiped out by the Rays or the Red Sox or whoever it is that make, or the A's or whoever. That shouldn't matter. And I get it. Like, the ideal trade, you make your team better this year and next year, and I think that's what DePoto thinks he has done. But it's just the reality of how it happened and the way in which it happened, and especially the embarrassment of there are more moves coming, and then the next move is like Tyler Anderson, who's fine. Tyler Anderson is fine. But you can't make a move like that and then say bigger things are coming, and then the next move is we just got the Pirates' fourth starter after the Phillies decided they didn't want to trade for him. You just look like an ass. That's the thing. Like I, the value of this deal, purely if you look purely at the numbers, this deal makes sense for Seattle. But beyond those numbers, this deal makes it makes sense for Seattle it makes some sense for Seattle. With the context of where this team is and who Graveman got traded to and all that other stuff, it makes no sense at all. Even with Tyler Anderson coming in, and even... It puts the Mariners in a position, too. They have to do something big now these next 2 days. And that's not been what the Mariners have been, even under DePoto. Not in a while, anyway. So, I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it. I get it, but I don't get it. And I just feel bad for Mariners fans that even when they make a trade that ostensibly makes some sense, it still comes in this fashion and in this way.
Do you think this is as much of a head scratcher if it's not to the Astros, like, or the A's? Like, if this
no,
is,
I think yeah. I think if this had been like they trade Kendall Graveman to, I don't know, the Mets for some piece. I think it still doesn't look great, because it's like, why are you giving up your closer when you're a game out of a playoff spot? But I think it understands, well, at least you're not giving him up to your direct competition, and for as much as, you know, Toro doesn't really... I think the other part of it is Graveman helps you more now than Toro does, which I think is why you saw the Astros make that move. Yeah, Toro's a guy who's still got however many years of team control left, 2 or 3 or whatever it is, and can help, you know, now in the future, but the Astros need relief help more than they need a random utility guy. And so that's what they did. And I think in the same vein, it's like, if you're the Mariners, what is the argument that you need a utility guy for now and next year more than you need a closer who's already good? Like, even beyond DePoto possibly selling high on Graveman. Again, what message does that send to the rest of the team and to your fan base that your own GM is like, yeah, like, we're only a game out of a playoff spot, but we don't have a chance of making that. And also, this closer is not actually as good as we think he is, so we're getting rid of him. I don't know. I do think it would have been different had they sent him to a different team, but I think just sending him to Houston is really what makes it just all the more incomprehensible, because it's you're not just saying our playoff odds aren't good enough, you're then actively making them worse. And playoff odds don't need to be the be-all, end-all. I think they're just a nice... They're a marker point, you know? They're not the be-all, end-all. But I just don't understand the idea of, like, if you're basing what you're going to do on, you know, in part on... If you're basing what you're doing in part on what the odds or what the math says your playoff odds are, fine, but why would you then make them worse and your direct competitor better? Do the Mariners really love Abraham Toro that much? I guess, but it just feels like, I don't know, again, it just feels tone deaf in a way that I think Jerry Dipoto often is, but really I think especially, you know, for... I think this also would have been different if the Mariners were 5 games out of a playoff spot rather than 1. You know, or if they hadn't just had that big come-from-behind win the day before. So, yeah, I think that does make a huge difference, and it just makes it hard to evaluate that trade even as a just on the terms of a player swap, because it's one of the things where it's like, Seattle, what are you doing? And why? Why are you doing this?
It's a tradition unlike any other. Seattle, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? 20 years. What are you doing?
Why are you doing? What and why are you doing? Always.
Oh, poor Seattle fans, man. But, like, we've talked about this whole podcast. We're like, yeah, it's probably still not going to happen, but it's still... I didn't peg Dipoto as the GM who would make the most cynical trade deadline move, though. I don't think either of us saw that coming, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, it is a Jerry Dipoto thing to make moves regardless of, like, you know, he's very clearly not a sentimental general manager. But yeah, I guess that's the thing. This is an insanely cynical trade, and for as much as maybe we didn't see Dipoto, I don't think we really saw this coming out of... It says something like the Marlins just made their trade for Starling Marte and they gave up Jesus Luzardo, which is huge. It's an incredible... Or the A's, rather, gave up Jesus Luzardo, which is an insane pay for... Not insane, but it's a really... You know, it's a real big pay for a free agent outfielder. But when the Marlins aren't being as cynical as you are, when the Marlins are out there being like, no, we want to get a fair... granted, it's easier for them. They're not in the playoff picture, and they're nowhere near it, and so they can just sell off whatever they want. But when they're getting a better return than you are, and you're a team in the playoff chase, that just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, does it?
No. No. Well, let's get into the Marlins-A's trade, because it's fascinating. It's not very often you get a lefty... What is he, 23?
25, I believe Luzardo is. He's very young.
I thought he was younger than that. I thought he was like 23. Maybe I'm wrong.
He is, in fact, 23. He turns 24 in September.
Okay. Just crazy. But also, I think the Marlins are paying for the remainder of Marte's...
Yes, Marlins are paying the remainder. Which is the only way an A's Marlins trade could have happened, is that one of these cheapskate teams just had to eat the money. It really did feel kind of like a immovable object, unstoppable force. Like, which of these cheapskate teams will want to, like, is going to be like, no, you have to eat money. But, no, I mean, it makes sense. Like, the Marlins ate the entirety of that salary in order to get Luzardo, which is crazy because there wasn't that much of that salary left. I believe it was about $4 million or so that Miami ate. So, yeah, and I mean... It's interesting. Like, it's just looking through Twitter now, it looks like the Marlins were asking the Yankees for Anthony Volpe, who is one of their top prospects, a shortstop, and they more or less said no. But they obviously said no. So it's interesting that Marlins actually got someone to bite on their price of, we want a cost-controlled young player, in exchange we'll pick up all of Marte's salary. I really didn't see the A's being one to do that. And it's really fascinating how far Luzardo has fallen in their eyes. This is a guy who, when the season started, you were thinking he's going to end up being their number one starter. Instead, he's getting dumped for 2.5 months of Starling Marte. And which is not to say that Starling Marte is bad, but boy, I think there must be something up with Luzardo that... Yeah, something has clearly happened with Luzardo and the A's where they feel like this is not a relationship worth continuing. which I find confusing because I've never gotten any sense that Luzardo is a bad person. The only thing we've seen this year that's just been kind of worrisome is that, I mean, beyond his poor performance, is that he broke his hand in it seems like a fit of video gaming peak.
Mm.
He was terrible when he came back. He's been in AAA. I mean, maybe the A's just feel like there is something wrong and different now with him, and they just don't want to work on it anymore. But that still is an extraordinary amount to pay, again, for 2 months of what is a very good player, but a very good player who's also almost there's no, if the Marlins weren't going to re-sign Starling Marte, then the A's certainly aren't. That's the other thing. It's like this is 1,000% a rental. Which makes me think that the A's really, you know, the A's are really going for it in a sense, which I find almost weirder than what the Mariners are doing.
Yeah, the A's, I don't know. I was more optimistic about the A's, I think, coming in the year than you were, but, like, I mean, they're going for it. Like, but also, their outfield was just horrid all year long. They had to do something.
Yeah, like, they had to do something about that outfield because Ramon Laureano is pretty much the only... Ramon Laureano and Robbie Grossman is pretty much all they have, and that won't work long-term.
No. So, I think this is just more like a Band-Aid. It doesn't really solve anything. It doesn't really move the needle. It doesn't make me think they have a better shot of really running the table in October, but I do think it's a positive. Starling Marte is going to help them more in 2021 than Jesus Luzardo would help them. And also, the flip side of this from Miami's perspective, I think is more interesting, which is that, like, it's just another young, high upside arm in this core, potentially.
Yeah,
like,
this Miami rotation, if everyone is healthy next year, is Rogers, Alcantara, Luzardo, Sixto Sanchez, and who am I forgetting in there?
I mean, you can add whoever. Wade LeBlanc?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, that doesn't matter, but they have more young pitching beyond that. They have Eduardo Cabrera down in the minors, who's a very good young pitcher. They have, everyone we've mentioned already, that rotation alone, you can build a rotation with just that alone, which is absolutely crazy.
I
forgot Pablo Lopez.
Yes.
So like, there you go. Luzardo, Sanchez, Alcantara, Rogers, Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
All those guys healthy at once, that's the best young rotation in baseball.
Yeah. They're terrifying. Like, the Marlins are absolutely terrifying. So I like this a lot from Kim NG. Is it Nige? How do you pronounce it? I always
Nige.
Nige. Okay. It's interesting. And, you know, Marte will be good. I think this is, like, one of those rare ones, like, outside of the jokes about the $4 million, I think this is good for both sides, and it makes sense for both sides.
It makes a ton of sense for both sides. The A's need another outfielder. The Marlins wanted a young, cost-controlled piece. I do wonder, for the Marlins, at some point they really do need to start adding offensive pieces. And maybe that's something in the offseason. Maybe they do use some of that pitching depth they have to make a move for a young, cost-controlled hitter, because that offense really, really is a struggle, and Marte was far and away the best hitter currently on it. And obviously he wasn't going to be a part of the future because Miami had already decided he was too expensive for their future plans. But, you know, great, like, Jazz Chisholm was hurt. When he's healthy, obviously that makes a difference, and they should get better going forward out of Jesus Sanchez. And, you know, they just called up Lewin Diaz, they have Isan Diaz, they have, you know, they have guys on that roster who you expect better out of. The problem is, you know, they're still, you know, some of those guys are hurt, obviously, so they're not going to get it this year, and they still need to add some of that depth next year, because this farm system is very pitching oriented. And I don't know, maybe if they continue selling, it makes sense the Marlins are probably going to continue selling. I assume Jesus Aguilar might bring back an interesting bat of some kind. I mean, I'm kind of struggling to see what else the Marlins could realistically move that might get them something back. I don't think Adam Duvall is gonna bring much. I'm not sure if they want to move Yimi Garcia. Maybe they can get a decent piece for him. Marte was obviously their big piece, and they obviously did very well in getting who they got in Luzardo. It, at the very least, gives them another rotation depth piece for next year. And maybe at some point they do use, like I said, that surplus of young pitching they now have to go get a hitter, because that I think that's really what the Marlins need next. We've seen it a couple years in a row now that offense is just not particularly strong. They need to get better, and they need to get some guys they can kind of count on for the long run.
Mm-hmm. I want to move to the Orioles real quick, John. What is a podcast with you and I if we don't talk about the Baltimore Orioles?
It's not a real thing.
I didn't think so either. They had a good weekend, and it was their first three-game home sweep of its regional rivals in 11 years with the Nationals. Like, that's insane. They won on a walk-off fielder's choice. It was a great, great ending on Sunday. But they have options, and I am happy that it looks like they are going to take the non-cynical approach and keep their M&Ms. Their M&Ms. Say that really fast. Means
they're mms.
They're mms. That's what we can go with.
Mms. Okay, I'm just gonna stop there because it's just gonna. Everyone has stopped listening at this point.
John Means, Cedric Mullins, and Trey Mancini.
Yes.
I am hopeful that they keep all three. No, I mean, would I love the Braves to trade?
I don't see any reason for them to move any of those three unless they get blown away with an offer, because two of those guys are in Mullins. Mullins is a guy you build around. Means is a little on the older side, but is definitely a guy you build around. And Mancini, the sheer PR hit that the Orioles, I think, like the Mariners, tend to operate managerially in a vacuum, or at least front office-wise in a vacuum, where they don't really care what their moves mean to the fans, the rest of the team, anyone. But Mancini, coming after doing what he's done, coming back, no. There has to be a limit somewhere. And I think for as much as maybe the Orioles front office thinks, if we moved Mancini, we actually could get something good back, I think even they have to understand our fans might kill us if we do this. What few fans are left might kill us if that's the road we go down.
They're pretty excited for that walk-off. Fans were there, and they're pumped. It was something nice.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, at some point, you have to give your fans, if not a crumb, which sounds very shitty, you have to give them something, and trading away Trey Mancini is taking it all away. Even if you were to land a Luzardo-type return, like, you're telling your fans, this popular player you love, who came back from this grueling cancer diagnosis, who worked hard, clearly loves being here and loves the Orioles and loves the fan base and loves the city of Baltimore. Yeah, we got rid of him. Go to hell. Because that's basically what you're saying when you make a move like that. Go to hell.
Go O's.
We know there are 2 months left in the season. We don't care if you guys like him or not. Which, granted, has been the tanking team thing for a while now. But I think even with the Orioles, there have to be limits. And I think that has to be one of those limits.
On the flip side, the other DC team, all kind of a mess right now. It looks like the Nationals are out of it. It's now the big three in the NL East with the Phillies, the Braves, and the Mets duking it out down the stretch here. The Nationals, with Carter Kieboom, not starting the season with the team. He's been demoted twice, sitting pretty well, AAA, getting more comfortable moving from short to third. But there's a quandary there. Like, Starlin Castro is not coming back for obvious reasons this year. Mercer did not work out. It's just a big hole there at third. And then you wonder, like, Max Scherzer, who's apparently okay with opening up his no trade clause, but he would prefer to go out west because that's where he would sign a long term deal. The next deal is out west. So if you trade him to the White Sox or something, like, he's probably not gonna resign. Yes. It's interesting. What do you make of what the Nationals should do at third? Because they could really, really go after Chris Bryant, which is they've been linked to in the last week, and, you know, hey, we can figure it out. But Strasburg now gone for the year with TOS, and he's had a lot of injuries, and it's a mixed bag on pitchers who have had this. I think Yami Garcia's had it. There's been a handful of different guys who've had it, but the results sometimes are not great. He had carpal tunnel. Like, Steven Strasburg just might be an injury guy at this point, someone you just can't pencil in anymore. And Scherzer gone, then it changes. Like, there's so many different directions that the Nationals could go in, and it's just extremely fascinating to me to see what they do, because this is not a cynical organization. The Lerner family and Rizzo are very, very, like, we can piece it together. Our farm system sucks. We can piece it together. They won a title. Not, like, they won a title in the last 5 years. I am just so curious to see where they go. What do you think happens in the next 48 hours in Washington.
So, yeah, that's a fascinating one to me because, like you said, the Nationals have never been a team before that's given up. The Learners and Mike Rizzo have always, like you said, we can make it work. We can piece it together. If nothing else, we don't want to sell because we just don't want to sell. I don't really think they have a choice here. I don't really see how they can avoid moving Scherzer if they have an opportunity because whatever they get back is obviously going to beat whatever draft pick comes out of him rejecting a qualifying offer and signing somewhere else. And this Nationals team, I mean, I think we've said it. I know I've said it a couple times this year, but I definitely think the window for this particular roster this season was closing, and now it definitely feels like it has closed. Like you, I'm super worried about Strasburg. Obviously, thoracic outlet syndrome is just about the worst injury a pitcher can suffer, or one of them. It is more or less a career killer. No one has really come back from it the same. A few guys have managed to come back in pieces, but none of them really at the same peak that they once were. So I'm very worried that Strasburg's career is effectively, if not over, about to enter a kind of Matt Harvey-esque stage that nobody really wants to see. So if you're the Nationals, you very clearly need to focus now on what the future looks like. I don't know why that future doesn't seem to include Trey Turner and all the talk that they're not interested in signing him to a contract extension. I do not understand that at all. But certainly you want to build around Soto. Ideally, you would build around Turner. You build around the rest of your farm system and what it's producing. And you bolster that farm system by moving Scherzer. So I think they kind of have to. I really don't think they have a choice here. For as much as I think the Learners and Stan and Mike Rizzo would much rather finish the season with Max Scherzer and have him making his starts. And yeah, you still finish below 500, but at least you finish below 500 with Max Scherzer. Nah, you can't really afford that at this point. You're not going to win the division barring something crazy happening. I definitely think the Phillies and Braves are at this point, even are both better than the Nationals anyway, to say nothing of the Mets. Where Scherzer goes, I understand like that West Coast idea. I think he would make sense on either of those three teams, the Dodgers, the Padres, or the Giants. I can't really say I have a prediction there one way or the other. I think that's just an impossible one to predict because he makes sense everywhere. It's just going to be a question of who's willing to pay the price. And I think that's kind of the hard thing for me to figure out is what does the price for Max Scherzer look like, given that he is a free agent, that he is 37, but on the other hand, he is Max Scherzer. And who is going to be willing to pay that price the most? It does feel like it's going to be one of the West teams because I think they've all realized that they need a separator. And the Dodgers probably are in the best position overall because they just have the best overall roster.
But the Padres need him the most.
I'm sorry?
But the Padres need him the most. That's the interesting thing. Like they need.
What I was going to wonder. It's like, do the Giants or the Padres need him more?
I would say the Pods.
I mean, I would say the Giants, if only because otherwise you're going into the postseason with Kevin Gausman as your number one, and that's not bad, but Gausman hasn't looked great since the All-Star break, and certainly you'd much rather go into your, especially if you're the Giants and you're heading for the wild card game, wouldn't you rather get there with Max Scherzer starting that game than Kevin Gausman?
Well, it was more about like long-term playoff run implications for me, where the Padres' rotation with Paddock and everybody else, it's just been destroyed, and what Darvish has been post- sticky stuff ban, it's not good. So I guess that was more of my thing is like just how elite that offense is and adding Adam Frazier, and I'm curious how this all works with Cronenworth and everything else, but they're so good offensively and the bullpen is so good that I just think that's the last missing piece. I think the Giants have multiple missing pieces to winning the National League. I think Max Scherzer might be enough to push the Pods over the top in the National League. Does that make sense?
And that makes sense, especially because, like you said, like the Padres are pretty well set everywhere, whereas the Giants, I think, you know, maybe they end up, I know they've been in rumors for Chris Bryant. I just saw John Morosi tweet that they're interested in Trevor Story.
Maybe
San Francisco would rather focus on the offense and figure pitching-wise, we can do the playoff strategy of we get 4 or 5 innings out of our starter and then let the bullpen do the rest. And maybe they pick up, maybe if they trade for Trevor Story, they add John Gray in there to get an extra starter, to get some extra arms. So, and definitely of all the teams prospect-wise, I think the Padres probably have the most pieces to make a theoretical Scherzer deal work if the Nationals are asking for a lot, because that farm system is still very, very strong even after all the trades they've made. The Dodgers, obviously, are the wild card here. You can easily see a world where they make the move. You can easily see a world where they go, we're fine. We're getting Kershaw back. Kershaw, Bueller, Urias, Price is fine for the next 2 months in the postseason or whatever it happens to be. You know, or maybe they're another team that makes a smaller kind of back of the rotation addition, just to be like, just to take some of the weight off of Gonsolin and Price, who just have, you know, one needs to be stretched out, the other hasn't been particularly good. So, yeah, I mean, I can see any of the three. I do think I agree that the Padres probably have the most need and probably the best way to fill it, because they don't really have any other needs that they need to take care of necessarily. So, yeah. It's going to be fascinating, though. I think Scherzer, I think he has to get moved, though, at this point. That's kind of the thing.
If you're Farhan Zaidi, would you be concerned about the Chris Bryant, like, is open to returning to Chicago after the year? If you give up a lot of pieces for somebody like Bryant.
No, I'm not concerned about that, because you have to understand, like, one way, like, it's unlikely you get an extension done with any of these guys, and it's more likely not that it's a rental. And if Bryant goes back to the Cubs, well, so be it. The whole point of getting Chris Bryant now is to help you win the World Series in 2020. Or, sorry, in 2021. You know that he's probably more likely than not going to be part of the team in 2021 and 2022 and beyond. Does he make sense for the Giants for 2022 and beyond? Yeah, absolutely. He'd be their third baseman of the future. He can play some outfield. You know, he's a good, dependable bat in the top of the order. But I don't think a team acquiring a rental can work unnecessarily on those lines of, we have to make sure that this is something for 2022 and beyond as well. Because then you start making things too complicated, and at some point you make the deal to make the team better and figure it out later. You know, and if Bryant is amenable to an extension without hitting the market, great, by all means, do it. I kind of have a hard time seeing that happen. I think he'd be more willing just to see what the price is anyway. But hey, maybe he's... But at the very least... And that's the other part of trading for a rental, even if you don't have plans to extend him. Let's say the Giants get Chris Bryant. He spends the 2 months in San Francisco. He loves it there. He loves his teammates. The Giants, you know, maybe they win the World Series. Maybe they make the playoffs and don't go far. But either way, he loves the experience. And that sells him on returning to San Francisco in the offseason. That's the thing. You didn't have any plans on that happening. But if nothing else, maybe a la the Cardinals with Paul Goldschmidt, you can sell him on, this is the place where we will treat you right long term. You know, you fit here. We want you here. And this is a fun place to be.
Yeah. You know who's not involved in anything? I'm going through different stuff. And it's just the Cardinals are not doing anything. They're in a weird spot. They're not linked to anything.
No, they just had Nolan Arenado get hit on the arm and leave a game, so they may be in a particularly bad spot. Mm. I don't know what you do if you're the Cardinals, though.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's so interesting. Like, I haven't seen a peep out of them.
I just think there are too many holes for that team to fill that any one deadline is going to be enough for them.
I tend to agree. I'm curious to see if they do anything. They're sneaky.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the current Cardinals and have to say, okay, if there's one area that the Cardinals absolutely must target to improve if they want to have any real chance of playoff contention, which they're also, you know, they're below 500, they're not a particularly good team, they don't have a good off, or they're basically right at 500, their playoff odds are about 4%, so they're pretty well down in it. I mean, I'd say realistically, maybe you make a move to get a new shortstop. I mean, maybe you're in the market for a Trevor Story to pair with Arenado, that'd be fun, and you just bench Paul DeJong. Maybe you're in the market for an outfielder to kind of reduce Dylan Carlson's playing time, because that hasn't really worked out. I think you desperately need an extra starter for that rotation, which Wade LeBlanc is currently your third starter, and that's just really not a good place to be. I don't know. I that's the thing, though. You look and you can see plenty of places where the Cardinals could use help. I know they're going to get Jack Flaherty back at some point, but that's coming off an oblique strain, and those things take time. Yeah, I don't know. The offense needs help. The rotation needs help. You could certainly argue another reliever would not be the worst addition to that bullpen that doesn't really have a whole lot of consistency. I don't know. I just feel like they're, with the Brewers aside, I just think every other NL Central team just has too many holes at this point. Hey, that's funny. I mentioned Yimi Garcia as a trade possibility. Ken Rosenthal says the Astros are close to getting him. So there you go. The Marlins sell-off continues. And I'm not surprised that they want to move Yimi. He's 30. He's had a better season, I think, anyone expected. I think it makes sense for Miami to sell high on him. But yeah, I think we're going to see the Marlins be a team that moves a lot of veteran pieces now.
Last thing, we'll wrap up here in this trade deadline episode of the podcast, John. Let's see. It's going to be... I was doing the math in my head of the hours. let's just, when we record next week, it will be after the trade deadline, give me what you think is going to be the biggest, who, rather, is going to be the biggest player moved ahead of the deadline. Who would you guess right now?
Biggest player moved ahead of the deadline, I would guess it's Scherzer.
Okay. Is he a bigger name than Bryant?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Scherzer's a number one for any rotation. Bryant's a big deal. But I still do believe that Scherzer is a game changer for anyone who gets him, because you're getting him as your new playoff number one starter if you make it that far. And that's a really, really big deal. Plus, it's Max Scherzer. He's got two Cy Youngs. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's only 70-some strikeouts shy of 3,000 for his career. He's one of the greatest pitchers literally ever. Yeah, I think it's Scherzer is the biggest name to move.
I'm going to say Shohei Ohtani. No, I'm just kidding. But that would be great.
That would be something.
Just free one of them. That'd be nice. Free one of them.
Free Shohei.
Yeah, free Shohei. Duval, I just feel like it's going to be a Brave. It's going to be my guess. What's your Red Sox one? Oh, we'll end there. What is your Red Sox prediction? I'll say the Braves trade for Duval and maybe another starter.
My Red Sox prediction is one way or another they get another first baseman. I just don't think they can keep living with the Bobby Dalbec experiment at this point. I can see them getting another starter. I just think if they did, it would be someone along kind of those Tyler Anderson levels. I don't really think they're going to get a number one type guy. And I think there's also the question of, and I know my easy answer would be, I don't care. But, you know, with a rotation that already has Pivetta, Richards, Perez, who's the rest of that Red Sox rotation right now? They have Chris Sale coming back. They just had Tanner Houck come up. I think their rotation is something where they're going to sit back and say, between Houck and Sale, those two give us depth and reinforcements, and we don't really need to spend the prospect capital on someone like John Gray if he's just going to be basically a fifth starter. To which my response would be he would be a way better fifth starter than Martin Perez, but that he's also going to cost money and prospects, and so I understand that that move is probably not going to happen. I mean, ideally, would you like to get someone who is better or at least more reliable than a non-sticky stuffed Garrett Richards or Eduardo Rodriguez or Perez? Sure. Are the Red Sox going to do that? I kind of doubt it. I think they are just going to say, screw it, between Houck and Sale, we'll be fine. I think they're more likely to focus on getting a first baseman at the very least, and ideally a second baseman, but I think they might just try to staple second base together between Christian Arroyo and Marwin Gonzalez and whoever else happens to be around and works.
Okay. There you go. John Taylor, always a pleasure.
Yes.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.